Stevenson's new album is her sixth. The self-titled album is bristling with grief and anger, but it's also hopeful and redemptive. Laura grew up with a mix of rock and show tunes in her family home, so her combination of influences makes sense when you hear it. She seamlessly segues from Americana through doo-wop and melancholy, romantic lyrics that recall Elliott Smith. The rawness is in the spirit of Liz Phair. Laura and I spoke about the influence and the timeline of creating the new album, including Stevenson's daughter being born and the role of COVID. Her album is out on August the 6th through Don Giovanni Records. The way that this came about is I listened to NPR New Music Friday, and and they played a track from your new album, and my test with that show is, can I walk around, do the vacuuming, play with the dogs, and if the whole show happens and I haven't paid attention, then it doesn't grab me. But when your song came on, I just stopped and went, need to know who this is right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so look, I love it, and I'm hoping that that we can kick off with you telling me, I guess, where it began for you. When did you start writing? What was the impetus, the catalyst?
I started writing. Something really horrible had happened to a person that I loved, and I unfortunately can't go into it. Because it's kind of like a delicate situation, but so something really bad happened, and so I kind of like moved to where all that happened so that I could help that person and the people that love that person, just get through it. And so then, and I was like on tour, and then I had to fly across the country to go, and help, and then I stayed there for a long time, longer than I thought I was going to have to stay there, and then I came home, and I was just like, just kind of fell apart as soon as I got home, and then I just started writing. So that was like 2018, and yeah, so it was, and then that was like a year before my record, The Big Freeze, came out, because I kind of like took the year to kind of like regroup. And then my other record came out, and then I toured on that, and then as soon as that record touring was cycle was over, I got pregnant like after the last show. I was in Ireland, and then I got pregnant and did a little bit of touring, and then I just like used the rest of my pregnancy to record and make this record. Great. And then COVID happened as soon as my daughter was born. So it was kind of like a long period of time before I put this out. So it was an interesting journey.
Yeah. So how old is your daughter now?
She's 15 months now.
Right. Well, at least we can't call her a COVID baby.
Right, exactly. Yeah, March 22nd. It was before, I guess it was like just as lockdown was starting, but there's more to her story than just COVID.
Absolutely.
But so, I mean, well, her being like out in the world, I guess that was all COVID, but yeah, we're having a nice time. Like now that things are opening up a little bit, we went to get ice cream the other day and had ice cream outside. And so she's seeing more people, and she's less and less afraid of loud trucks and motorcycles. So she's starting to understand the world a little bit.
I love that. Where are you based?
I'm based in upstate New York. So we're about like 2 hours north of Manhattan, two hours north of New York City.
And is that where you grew up?
No, I grew up in a suburb of New York City called Long Island. Mm-hmm. So I was like a half hour, 40-minute train ride to the city as a kid, and it was nice to have that proximity. But it's also really nice to be up in the country where I live now.
Mm-hmm. And so it's you, your partner, and your daughter?
Mm-hmm. And our dog.
I love it. Do you mind me asking who your partner is? Is he a musician?
Yes, he is a musician. He plays music with me. He plays bass in my band. His name's Mike Campbell.
So without going into the exact details of why you had to fly over and help this friend, how do the lyrics refer to how you felt at that time? And did it feel, once you wrote about it, as if you were healing from it, or was it still traumatic to write about it?
It was all very much a healing process. It was like, it was simultaneously healing and also just kind of like, kind of organizing everything that had happened, because it was a lot of like chaotic, there was just like a lot of chaos going on. Mm. So then when I got home, I was just like, you know, just sitting in my studio, looking at the trees and just thinking about everything that had just happened. So it was like, I was still very much, I hadn't processed anything, because I was kind of like, you know, when something happens and there's the people that are kind of like rushing to help everything and they're not like grieving at all or crying or even like thinking about what's happening, that was kind of my role in the circumstances. And so I was just busying myself helping everybody else, which was definitely a coping mechanism for me. And then as I got home, it was like, I didn't know what to do with any of the things that had happened. I didn't know what to do with myself and all these feelings. I just hadn't thought about anything. Mm-hmm. And so then it was definitely getting me through the kind of like PTSD aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of like, yeah, just organize my thoughts and the events and how I felt about each thing. And now listening to it, it is healing, and it's healing for the people that were involved too. I got to share the record with them, and especially a song like State, which is that song that you heard on NPR. That song, I feel like, was such a embodiment of the anger and rage I felt. And then also there's a music video that my friends made of them just like smashing things. And so it was really, really good for the people that were involved to see somebody acting out, you know, all the rage that they had too. It was like very cathartic for them. Mm-hmm.
Which of the songs came first, and was it an easy process, or did you really struggle to find the sound that you wanted?
The song that came first is the last song on the record. It's called Children's National Transfer. That's just like a minute and a half long song. I think it's less than 2 minutes. Just kind of a little, just a moment that happened that I just wanted to like crystallize and just, you know, try to remember everything about it. And so that was the first thing I wrote. It was the easiest song I've ever written, obviously, because it's also very short. It's very short. But it was just like a pure, you know, expression. And that song is just a moment. There's really no feeling in that song other than like living in the present moment. And then everything else was easy. It was an easy record to write. Just because it was all things that were just so, I don't know, the feelings that I was having and the way that I was able to, get everything out just felt like a pure experience for me. Mm-hmm.
When you write, do you write alone? Is Mike involved in the process at all, or do you carve out your own space to work on things?
Oh, yeah. No, I have to be totally alone. Mm-hmm. I can't write with people. It's a very, very solitary experience for me. Mm-hmm. But then when, you know, when the song is written and everything's ready and I'm ready to, like, if it needs drums and bass, then me and Mike and my drummer Sammy get together and then we work on their parts and kind of just get the song as a full band song, you know, but the whole song, lyrics, melody, everything, all the parts are written before, mm-hmm. Before anybody else walks into that room, because it's, a song is a very personal thing for me.
Yeah. As a writer, I hear you. I don't like anyone involved in anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So do you have a space that you write in at home? Do you have a dedicated space where everyone knows to leave you alone? And how difficult has it been, I guess, with both the pandemic and a very young daughter to pursue your creative, I guess, your art?
I do have... Oh, sorry. What was the end of that question?
I suppose we trailed off with the creative, but I suppose what I meant is to pursue your art.
Right. Yeah. Well, I do have a dedicated space. I have a studio, and so that's great. And it's out in behind my garage, so it's on my property. So that has been okay during COVID. But the lack of ability to be using my time other than like catching sleep has been a big roadblock this like entire year, because my daughter had a lot of sleep issues. Mm-hmm. So I was up, you know, four times a night and I was not sleeping. So any time that I had to myself, I was just handing her off to my husband and saying, like, I have to go to sleep. So yeah. it's been really difficult to get out there and write. So that's been tough. It actually has made this year really difficult for me, because there's mm-hmm. also so much more about everything that's been going on that I want to process. And writing is a really good way for me to process what's going on. So all the COVID fear, new baby fear, all that mm-hmm. stuff, that's all very raw, and still I need to work out there in the studio. But hopefully she's actually sleeping much better now. She's sleeping through the night usually now, so I'm more well rested. But I've been spending a lot of my extra time practicing for the shows I have coming up, so it'll be really nice to actually like slow down and just work on songs. I would love to work on songs. It would make me feel whole.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the shows that are coming up.
There's not a lot coming up, but mm-hmm. I have two solo shows opening up for Lucy Dacus, who's a really wonderful songwriter. And then I have four shows, full band shows, in the fall. Mm-hmm. Which is October. I know that your seasons are opposite.
Yeah,
ours, so
yeah, yeah. I was going to ask.
Spring.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in October, I have four shows with the full band, and that's mm-hmm. going to be really nice. But then after that, it's kind of a question mark. Everything is like, it's been so slow going, you know, and mm-hmm. we've been so cautious. So I didn't mm-hmm. want to jump into doing a big tour. You know, my daughter's not vaccinated yet. I'm still breastfeeding. So I'm like, I'm kind of just waiting for things to be safe for my family before, like, mm-hmm. really, really diving out into, like, being on the road for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm. Are you and Mike vaccinated?
Yes. Yeah. I got vaccinated as soon as I could, and I'm giving the antibodies to my daughter with my milk, and that's the best choice for us as a family. But I know everybody's kind of, like, just trying to struggle to figure out what the safest thing to do is, but that's what we decided was the best thing for our family.
Do you mind me asking when you did get vaccinated? I'm just aware that in Australia, I think it's 3% of our entire country is vaccinated.
It's oh, my goodness. Amazing. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's crazy. The U.S., I didn't realize how much of a disparity there is. Mm-hmm. I got vaccinated. My first dose was in April. And, and I got the Moderna shot. And everybody I know up here is vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And it just seems so crazy to me that there's so many people in the entire world that don't have access to it. It makes me feel really conflicted. He got it 2 weeks before I got it. Right. Because we were just making sure, we didn't know what was going to happen to mm-hmm. us. So mm-hmm. we wanted to make sure somebody was going to be able to take care of the baby.
Yeah. So talk to me about being a solo artist, because I know, or at least from what I've read, you largely kicked off in a collaborative group, Bomb the Industry. So I guess talk to me about being a solo artist as far as whether that was challenging, whether your ego took a beating, did it feel brave to you, or did it just feel like something that you had to do?
It was a very easy transition for me because all my friends that I was in a band with ended up just becoming my backing band in the beginning, and they were just really trying to push me to share my music, and so I was sharing my music with them behind me as my band to audiences that already were on my team, you know, because they were mm-hmm. fans of On the Music Industry, and they knew who I was, and so, like, it was the easiest transition mm-hmm. Ever for me. Because, I mean, it was scary, but it was, like, I had all these people, I had such a supportive environment to actually, like, experiment with playing live, which is, you know, I was scared about.
I love it. And forgive me, because I know no artist ever wants to be compared to any other artist. However, I'm going to do that right now. I heard a little bit of Mary Lou Lord, a little bit of Elliot Smith, Nancy Sinatra, Sheryl Crow in there, even a little bit of PJ Harvey. To me, there was something... you really managed to cross genre without it ever sounding, I guess, like a pick and mix. It's a very organic sort of crossing of genres. Were you thinking about your influences when you were making this album, or is that something where you listen back later and go, oh yeah, I can kind of hear where that came in?
Yeah, I'm usually just in it when I'm writing, and then later on I'm like, oh yeah, like there's a song on the record called Wretch, and when I was like trying to come up with other instrumentation for the song, I was like, oh my god, this is such an Elliot Smith song, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so we kind of leaned into that, and like with the cello player, my friend Sean, who played cello on the record, I was like, this is like kind of Elliot Smithy vibe, and he was like, got it. And then we were just like worked together on the parts, and so like I definitely hear it afterwards, but when I'm making something, I'm not thinking about what I'm making or how or even like anything about it other than just being completely present with it. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Elliot Smith is a huge, huge influence of mine for sure. I mean, I love his records. I think he's one of the best songwriters, you know, there ever has been. So yeah, that's a big one for me.
Yeah, I actually discovered him. I think it was through the Tenenbaum soundtrack, like a long, long time ago, and that might even not be the soundtrack that it was. Needle in the Hay.
Needle in the Hay. Yeah, that song's so beautiful.
It really was. That blew me away. That was of all the songs of his for the first time, that was pretty great.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that song is like so powerful.
He did a duet with Mary Lou Lord, and when I was looking for what Rich reminded me of, and it was Rich, there's a duet that he does with her that, and I went, yes, that's it. So I'm gonna have to send that to you, but
yeah, please. I've never heard of Mary Lou Lord. But
Well, I hadn't before doing a little bit of hunting around. I'll be fully and completely honest with you there. But that is the beauty, I guess, of diving into a Google rabbit hole, that you just discover things and you go, oh my God, how did I not know about this all my life?
Totally, absolutely.
Yeah, and now look, there are a couple of harmonies as well where I heard a little bit of maybe 60s girl group, a little bit of Supremes. What did you grow up listening to? What blew your mind? What's memorable for you?
Well, I definitely, you know, like the Ronettes and stuff, like that music to me, you know, like the Wall of Sound and the beautiful voices, and that was always like super inspiring to me. I grew up listening to kind of a random assortment of music. Mm-hmm. My dad was very into he was a hippie, but he didn't really go past, like I was talking about The Who the other day, and I was like, you know what, my dad never made me listen to The Who, so I don't really get The Who. but like I listened to The Beatles and Neil Young and, you know, like all that kind of stuff. And, but he lived in San Francisco in like the late 60s. So like Grateful Dead, obviously. He would just go to the park and watch the Dead play. And so he would follow the Dead around when I was a little kid and make me go to shows. And I didn't want to be there because it was, I thought that jam bands were boring. I really only liked the choruses. But now I can appreciate their songs, and I can appreciate jamming sometimes. But so I kind of grew up with that, those kinds of melodies at my dad's house, and my mom played us a lot of show tunes and a lot of big band music, and you know, that kind of stuff. So it was just like two completely different worlds musically, but both were it's inspiring to me in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because I think my dad probably was the same era, and he I appreciate it now. I don't think I did as a kid. I don't think you ever do as a kid, but we had all the Rolling Stones, all their videos on VHS, and my dad used to play it. I think for about a year, it was played nightly in our house. We would get dinner and sit down, and the Rolling Stones VHS. I can still not hear any of those songs without the video starting up in my mind. And some of them are pretty haunting for a kid. There's one where blood's coming out of the tap, blood's coming out of the shower. It's kind of a horror movie, and yeah, for a kid that's pretty horrific. As an adult, I can watch it now and go, that's pretty kitschy, like. But yeah, I think it's so formative when your parents are really into something.
Yeah, totally.
So as far as writing about something that is very personal, that involves other people, how did you navigate that? Did you say to your friend, I need to write something? Did you need to ask for permission? Did you need to sound them out before you put anything out? How did that work?
I wrote the songs, and then I let them hear it. Like the people that were involved, and it was moving to them, so that made me feel good, and it made everything okay, you know. As long as I don't talk about anything, you know, like then it's it's okay because everything's an abstraction, you know, it's everything is like the experience and not the details. So yeah, it's just like, it's definitely interesting to try to navigate around all the details, you know, because I'm a pretty open book and I have like, I'm pretty open when I'm talking to people. So it's like, it's been, interesting to be kind of cagey, which is, it's a rarity for me, but it's necessary and it's a good exercise in self-restraint, I guess.
Do you have a favorite song on the album? Is there something, when you're listening back to it that you go, yeah, I love that. I love that I created that.
Well, the thing I'm most proud of, which I like, I was showing the guitar player the other day. I was teaching him the songs and, the guy that's going to be playing guitar with us on tour and, or on these shows that are coming up. And I was like, ooh, I did something cool. And so I was like, I'm still proud of it. So like, and it's probably like nothing, but for me, it's like an interesting thing as a songwriter. So like, there's a song called Continental Divide, and the first chorus, I use the chorus, the there's a pre-chorus and then a chorus. And then during the second chorus, I flip the pre-chorus and the chorus, and then I kind of like added a tail onto the end of the pre-chorus, the previous pre-chorus. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it's like, I changed the, like I flipped them. Just to kind of like be like, this pre-chorus is so strong, it could be a chorus and vice versa. Which was like, it naturally was happening. It just made sense. All the pieces made sense where they needed to go. But then I was like, whoa, that was cool. So yeah, I'm really psyched about that. And every time I listen to it, I'm like, that was a great idea.
Laura, I've taken up more than enough of your time and you've been so generous. I just want to say again, sometimes I get assigned stories, sometimes I pitch things, and sometimes I really, really chase to get the interview with the person that I want. And in this case, I chased and hunted and chased, and I'm so thrilled that we had this chat.
Oh, well, thank you so much. This was really, really nice. I'm glad we got to talk.